welcome to Vision Scope, a program designed to educate and inform on matters relating to disabilities. My name is Wilbert Williams. Our guest today is Michael Richardson. Michael is from California. He is a member of the state affiliate of the National Federation of the Blind. So we are getting there. One of these days we're going to have the president, but we are going to go step by step.
Step by step. You never know. but you know what, Willie? I think this is actually the president as well. So if my memory serves me right, I wanted the chapter. You're dealing with a president too.
Michael, and he's going to tell us his story today. Michael, welcome to UVC Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate you.
Yes. Michael, I hear that you are the president of the state affiliate.
Oh, no. Not the state affiliate. Yeah, I'm the president of the Inglewood chapter. Our state affiliate president, his name is Tim Elder.
So okay.
Yes.
So he's a president, but not of the big chapter, the big body.
He's getting there. He's getting there.
Right. We have the affiliate president, and then we have many chapters and divisions under him. And I am the president of one of the affiliate chapters, which is the Inglewood chapter.
Oh, so if I get the structure right, within the state, there is the affiliate, and then you have chapters within the state. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
Like wings attached to the body.
Yes. It's called the entire state affiliate. That's over all of us, who governs all the chapters and affiliates. I mean, chapters and divisions. Then beneath the president of the state affiliate are chapter presidents and division presidents. And we have 21 chapters and divisions in the state of California.
And then within that, you could also have special interest groupings.
Yes, I would imagine. Yes, we do.
For example, diabetes is one of them that come readily to mind.
Yes, we call it Diabetic Action Network, where they talk about those who have experienced diabetes and vision loss pertaining to diabetes. Yes.
Yes. And then you would have subgroups like the people who are involved in the digital network.
Yes, we have technology. I mean, we have a variety of different members who do technology works, such as teaching or providing services for technology. So there's no specific group for that because it's overall.
It's an puts overall across. System.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Go ahead.
No. You go. I'm just here.
Michael, let's step back and take things back to your early days. Tell us a little bit about your early life. Were you born blind?
Yes, I was born blind. I don't remember being totally blind, but I was born totally blind. I was born with what you call I have a premature optic nerve. So my nerve did not fully develop. It developed slow. So at birth, I had no vision. And over time, my vision came as grew a little. And it's as far as it's going to go, which is now 20/200.
Okay, so you grew up, you grew up at the school for going to a school, a special school
in the beginning? So I'm from a place called Joplin, Missouri, and in Joplin there are no anything for blindness. There were no blind schools or any sort of system designed for visually impaired. So I was the only one. So as I was growing up, I knew that I could not read of afar. I couldn't see things from afar. And everything that I had, which including large print, or anything. It had to be magnified. So they had no idea at that point what to do with me. And I was born in 1966. So technology then is not like technology now.
No, no, it has come a long way.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, in your early days, you would not have had much technology to play around.
No technology at all.
Yes, yes. So how did you manage in terms of your education then?
Well, coming up, I started out having people reading what was in the books and then taking notes for me. Then I got access to some magnification and large print books, but I was still not able to see like what was the writing on the board. So I would have to literally get up and walk to the board in order to write down what was there. If it was like a speedy session where the teacher was writing stuff down and then they had to erase the board and then write other stuff down, then they would provide me with a note taker, a person who would write that stuff down for me. So I then have to go up and slow down the process of the class to have them wait for me to get the stuff off the chalkboard. So they had people to write stuff for me. And that went on through grade school. Once I got to junior high and high school, I was introduced to things like CCTVs, that's the digital magnifiers, but they didn't have that in Joplin, Missouri. So when I came out in my later years, I was 17 when I came to the state of California, that's when I was introduced to the digital magnifiers and different things that were available for people who are visually impaired that can use these things to enhance their skills and whatever it is that they want to do.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And you must have gone through a very difficult time when it comes on to socializing as a young blind person with those difficulties. What was socialization like?
Okay, so for me, I have this thing called nystagmus. Little slight nystagmus, stigmatism. So, you know, when you're in high school or junior high, kids are rough in their and how they tease you. So I was called quite a few names. When I would even walk up to the board to write stuff down, they would laugh at that or find that very peculiar to a mm-hmm. point where they would make fun of it. And it resulted into a lot of getting into arguments, a lot of fights, and there were a lot of people who eventually caught on to the situation. It was like, well, you know, so they started asking me questions and then I started explaining the situation.
I have been there, man. So I know what you're talking about.
Yes, I
simply cannot see as well as you, and I have to get close to things, and people want to make fun of it.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
you deal with it long enough till you finally get tired of it. So you start mm-hmm. rebelling. So I went through a great deal of that.
Did you get into fights?
Stayed in them. Especially in high school.
Willie, being in a situation like that, man, you don't hesitate to use your fists.
You learn to be resilient.
Yeah, you learn, and it also, in a weird kind of way, it also strengthens you too, because mm-hmm. you deal with so much that over time, with age, you start
absolutely
letting certain petty things, like most people would react to certain things, and mm-hmm. you don't react to them because you've seen worse growing up.
Absolutely true.
Vision
yeah.
to
yes,
overcome
yes,
things. Yeah,
yes.
So it strengthens you.
But you managed to overcome in all of this.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It's made me stronger. It's gave me a level of understanding. I always, when I'm dealing with someone, I always try my best to put myself in their shoes so I can get mm-hmm. an understanding of what mm-hmm.
yeah.
they're going through based off of what they're telling me.
One yes, thing absolutely.
You have to learn to listen to what the person is saying to you in mm-hmm. order to help them. And you develop some skills. When you go through trial and tribulation, you will develop some skills. Such
definitely, 100%.
Yep, absolutely. A level of understanding, being considerate, and being very thoughtful. I feel like if I have not went through those things that I went through, then I would not have the ability to assist someone in.
What was your family structure like? You had brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have brothers. I have brothers and sisters. And my mother, my auntie, my father, my family, they didn't look at me as a person who was visually impaired. It looked at me as a person who had some things to learn with his vision, if that makes sense. So they never allowed me to feel sorry for myself. They've never allowed me to say what I couldn't do. I mean, if it made sense, like, of course, they're not going to say go fly a plane or anything like that. But they've taught me to pay attention to things. They taught me my family taught me awareness and made sure that I understood something. If I didn't appear to understand, they would make sure that I understand it. Eye contact was something that was very important to my family that I had to learn, because I had a nasty habit of looking down because I was kind of insecure when it came to the movement of my, you know, the nystagmus in my eyes.
Yes.
So
yes.
Because of all the fights that I got into, I did my best not to look someone in the eye because I didn't want to trigger something that was going to create other problems. So when you go through so many issues and you grow, when you start doing that, it becomes a habit. Even now I have to catch myself, because although I don't feel that way anymore, I still have to catch myself because, you know, habits are hard to break when you do it for a long period of time. So my family was a strong force in my life, and they're the reasons why I carry the strength that I do. And they absolutely did not allow me to feel sorry for myself. And they've never put me down because of it. They've never said things to me that made me feel like I was inferior to, or made me feel like I shouldn't be. My family's, they've always been a strong foundation in my life.
What about your siblings? How did they react in all of this? You grew up with them, and I suppose they would realize that you had limitations. How did they cope with it?
You know, my brothers and sisters didn't really acknowledge it. I mean, there was never a discussion about it. If I couldn't see something, they would just, I'm like, I can't see it. And then they'll say, can you see it now? Yeah, I can see it now. It was that type of thing. It was never an issue. My brothers and sisters never had a problem, even with driving. Like, they drove and, you know, they never had a problem with me not driving. It was almost like it was a natural thing. Like, okay, this is what he doesn't do. Let's accept it and move on without actually saying it. So yes. I can honestly say I had a very pleasant,
comfortable
experience
life
with my family. Yes. Yes. Yeah. When it came to my family. Yes.
Michael, what was that like moving from school to work?
Okay. So the type of work that I do, I work with patients. So I was a CNA, certified nurse's assistant, for about 4.5-5 years. So I have to deal with this thing called, I'm visually impaired, but I don't look like I'm visually impaired. So when they think of blindness, they think of total blindness with cane and, you know, the things that they could physically see just by looking at a person, right? Whereas with me, you can't tell unless you see me read or get up close to something. So it was like a catch-22. So they'll look at you as if you are lying about the visual impairment. And then once they find out about the visual impairment, then they start questioning your abilities to do the work that you're going out to do because of that very same thing. So there was a situation where I was in the process of getting certified as a certified nurse's assistant. And I had went to a college. I'm going to say the name of the college out of fairness. But once I went to a counselor to get all my, you know, things together, and I explained to her what it is that I wanted to do, and she immediately started questioning me. Or a certified nurse's assistant requires a lot of this, requires a lot of that, requires a lot of this. So I explained to her my position in the fact that I can do this work. I wouldn't be coming here to get certified if I didn't know the work that I was doing, right? So she started questioning me about things like bed sores and things of that nature. And then she said, well, you know, a person who's visually impaired can't see things like bed sores and things like that. Even when as far as to make a, you know, to prove to me through a bed that I could not identify bed sores. I took the bed, of course, and she lost, right? Once again, as I stated earlier, my family, they taught me how to pay attention, and I've been in health ministry since I was a teenager. This is what I like doing. I like assisting people. I like helping people. I like working with people, putting them in a position of comfort. That's just what I do. Mm-hmm. Rather it's certified nurse's assistant. So I went through that. I was successful career. And then I started doing working in the community care licensing, working with children. I work with children. I work with Alzheimer patients. I work with adolescent teenagers, disabled adults, and then now seniors. So it was a different transition. A lot of times when they put things up on the board, they put like a lot of information on the board. You know, I myself can't see what's on the board. Once I knew that stuff was up there, I would go up to the board and I would write the information down. This was back in the early 90s, start writing this stuff down. Now you can use apps on your phone to walk up and just take a picture of something. It'll store it and read it for you later. So those are the advantages. I mean, I think the most stressful part about being having my type of vision is people thinking you are lying. Like, for example, if you hand me a book, I can't see the print on the book. If it's small print, I'm not going to be able to see it. They'll assume that you can't read.
Yes.
That type of thing, you know. So it's always people always try to figure out a negative question to ask. Even I think they'll just sit there and go, okay, let me just look at him. Okay, he's walking. He doesn't use a cane. He doesn't appear like he's trying to find his way. He doesn't appear to be lost. He doesn't appear to be struggling. There's nothing wrong with his vision, you know. I had to experience that type of thing. Even with my children didn't know the extent of my vision until they became teenagers. I played football with them, played basketball with them, that type of thing. And my oldest son asked me a question. He said, how come you never told us about your vision? I said, because I never wanted that to be an excuse for anything. And I wanted to be the best example that I can be for you guys. So it was trials. I worked at Mattel, the toy store. I worked there. And when I started working there, everything was cool. There was no problem. They was doing a background check on me. And they did a background check through their driver's license, how they do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
By me not driving as a visually impaired person, the license didn't come up. So they called me and they said, you know, we was checking through the DMV doing a background check, and your license was not coming up. I said, well, I don't drive. So in the state of California, the guy was saying to me, well, I find it kind of weird that you don't drive. I said, the reason why I don't drive is because I am legally blind and I don't have a driver's license due to that. Immediately when
that
I
set
said
off
that,
a storm.
Right. Immediately when I said it, they started treating me differently. They started walking slow next to me. They started doing hand over hand. They started doing all these things that I didn't ask them to do. So I had to, you know, we had to get through that. So it's basically everything is cool until they find out that I'm legally blind. Then once they find out they're legally blind, then here we go with the slow process, and then I have to slowly straighten things out. So I have to deal with that off and on.
Do you find that negative attitudes is one of the biggest forces that you have to contend with as a person who has sight impairment?
Yeah, yes. Like I said, you have to deal with people trying to make you feel that you're lying about your needs, right? Mm-hmm. They sit up and they self-diagnose you on what they think you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to listening to what your needs are. So when you start telling people what your needs are, then they start questioning you as if you don't know what you're talking about. So you have to go through that. You have to go through that type of thing. And I tell people all the time, when you're going to get assistance with anything, be confident and be firm. You know, stay professional, but be firm in what it is that you need.
Because
people will try to distract you and change your mind and try to put you in a position as if you don't know what you're talking about. And if you're not firm or confident in what it is you want, then you could easily fall for that trap. So I had experienced a lot of that.
Did you find that It was a barrier when it came on to promotions.
Say that again.
Did you find that blindness was a barrier for you when it came on to getting promotions?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because the work that I do, a lot of the organizations require you to have a driver's license.
Yes.
Right. You have to be able to drive. So when it comes to supervisory positions, you have to be able to drive from home to home, you know, and things of that nature. So the driving always became a barrier for me. Other than that, I haven't experienced too much. You know, no one has never criticized me or said that I can't do the work. And one thing about me is I go in knowing that there's a strong possibility that they're going to start criticizing me because they know that I'm legally blind. So anything that goes wrong, the first thing they're going to attack is the vision. So yes. I always made sure that I crossed my T's and dotted my I's. I pay special attention to the work that I did. And even went as far as to get coworkers to double check with coworkers quietly just to make sure that it's done. So if there's ever any questions or concerns, no one can say, well, you know, he didn't do this right because he can't see. So I've always had that thought as far as working is concerned.
Do you find that because of that sight impairment, you have become more meticulous in your work?
Yes, definitely. I feel you have to, because the way the world is, they look for the easiest way out instead of saying, hey, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. They'll go for the easy target first, which is the obvious knowledge of he's legally blind, so it's his fault. So yeah, so you become very meticulous because of that reason.
So are you still in nursing care program
yes.
now?
Yes, I work for a group home called Star for Seniors. I recently had surgery, so I've been off work due to that, but I am going to start back. I had surgery on my left foot in December of 2022. So I'm just slowly reacclimating myself back to the system. But yes, I still do that type of work. A technology consultant, helping people find different type of technologies that would best suit their vision, that type of thing. So yes, I still do this work.
Talk to me a little bit about you're married, eh? So talk to me a little bit about cast your mind back. It sounds like it's some time ago, but cast your mind back to your dating experience. What was that like?
Oh, dating experience. You know, I've never had a problem. Now, I've had women to say, I have come across women and I've talked to them in conversations. And they would say, well, you know what? Dating a guy who doesn't drive is weird to them. They would tell me that up front. Then once they get to know me and see what type of person I am, then they kind of change their thought process. But once you tell me something like that in dating, if a woman says to me, I don't date a guy that don't drive, and then she gets to know me, then I'm still kind of leery of dating her because she made a statement that probably could become a potential problem in the future, because she may say she says she wasn't okay with it. Then she'll change because she's gotten to know me. And then that still may be an issue.
It's a red flag.
Yes, it's a red flag. That's it. Absolutely. So once I date someone, it's not a problem. You know, it's always the initial conversation first. You know, we have a conversation, we'll talk, and things that they say, red flag, it's like the driving thing. I've had people in general conversations say they couldn't date a guy who didn't drive. So naturally, that's not a person that I will be talking to, you know. But once we started dating, it was okay. Because remember, they did not know that you can't tell that I'm visually impaired until you get to know me. You see me do certain things like read or walk up close to something. Then you'll say, But for that part, for me, I have to listen to a conversation. I have conversation with people. I don't just jump into something. I'm going to talk to you, find out where you at. And I tell them, be very honest and upfront, I'm not driving. I do not drive. I do not drive a car. There's not going to be a situation in the future where I'm going to drive a car. So that's never been a problem. They come in with that understanding, we're okay.
Talk to me about now how you met your wife. I'm sure that's still fresh in your mind. That never leaves your mind. As somebody with a visual impairment, what kind of trepidation you went through at the beginning and all of that?
Well, you know, my life right now in that aspect is kind of complicated right now, you know, because it's like I'm going through some things where people normally go through stuff, right? So I'm not exactly sure where I am in that situation. There's nothing consistent as far as me being married, right? It's like we, you know, I'm still going through some challenges there.
But it was not
my issues is not about the blindness. When I have issues, it's never about my visual impairment. It's other stuff that come on, like normal dating stuff, normal relationship stuff. So nothing that comes along with, nothing involving vision.
Okay, but what I was trying to get at is, you meet this lady. How did it all come together? You know,
so we have a conversation. We sit down and we talk.
Yeah.
We have a conversation. We sit down and we talk.
Did she accept your blindness at the outset?
Yeah. I make that very clear in every situation that I'm in. If that's a problem, let me know up front. And I've never had once I actually started dating, I've never had any problems with my vision. I've never been in a situation where I'm dating someone and then my vision becomes a problem later. I've never had that happen.
Because you stated up front.
Yes.
Would you say that in all instances that is the best way to deal with it?
Yes, it is the best way to deal with it because I find that people really don't like change. A woman may have been in a relationship prior to me, and she may have her husband or boyfriend or whatever come and pick her up from work, take her out, pick her up and take her out to dinner, take her for drives, take her to the beach, do things. You're not going to get that from me. I'm not picking you up in anything. You're going to always have to do the driving. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't let a person know that up front, then I may be a challenging situation later. And I don't want to hear someone say to me, well, you know, I thought that, you know, it was something that can be, that would change over time.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to make sure that a person clearly understands that I'm not driving. I'm not going to be in a situation to come pick you up. Not me. Now I can come pick you up and somebody else is driving. You know, if you need to be picked up, you know, I have people or friends, grown sons, you know, that drive, you know, daughters that drive. So they'll come pick you up. But as far as me driving up in a car and picking you up, that's never going to
happen. You got Uber too, man.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We got Uber. So, you know, we could do Uber now. So that discussion has never came up as far as my dating life is concerned.
Michael, talk to us now about the National Federation for the Blind. Walk us through, if you can, the structure of the National Federation for the Blind.
Oh, sure. Okay, so I joined the National Federation of the Blind in 2014. I actually went to a national convention before I actually joined the organization. And the convention is the reason why I joined, because they have so many components in how we help deal with blindness and visual impairment. And it was also an organization that made me truly appreciate my vision and allow me to be able to exercise my care for people in that organization. So in the organization, we definitely talk about legislative stuff or rights for blindness, where people have an accessibility to computers and talking books and things that would allow them to be able to get through college or successfully and be able to get their degrees. There are a lot of employment opportunities where all the conventions, we have different jobs that will come up that are ready to hire people who are visually impaired. There are a lot of socializing type things where people just get to know each other and support one another. They preach strongly. We talk strongly about independence. On the logo, it says live the life you want. So we're not trying to dictate to you how you should or should not live your life. But if you come in needing something, we do our best to provide it for you. The largest blind organization that I know of in all 50 states and in Puerto Rico. We have affiliates in each state, and in each state there are chapters and divisions. So you can move in anywhere in the United States and you can be connected with this organization. What I like most about the organization is the socialization and the connection, because there was a situation where someone actually blamed themselves for their vision because they said that they wouldn't, they felt like they didn't do right. And she met someone who had the exact same visual situation that she had. And once he talked to her, she stopped blaming herself. So you could come in feeling alone, and I guarantee you will meet someone who will have relatable conversation. That's what I enjoy most about it.
I had the privilege of attending a convention some years ago. But for the benefit of our listeners, what do you take away most when you attend these conventions? What stand out in your mind most of all?
The energy of the blind community, the strength and the ability of knowing that we are there to fight for our needs, to be able to stand for what we believe in, and we fight for our rights as a whole in all situations. We do our best to make sure that we are able to stay connected in every aspect of what's going on in the world today, whether it's through the web, through jobs, getting proper, being treated fair when working on jobs. I take away from the fact that we will fight for what it is that we need and what's going to benefit us and make us strive to be successful in whatever it is that we choose to do as visually impaired and blind individuals.
The convention, a large number of blind people coming together. I can recall the sound of white cane clattering down the hallway. And it's a very impressive sound because you never hear so many canes in your life. And it takes some getting used to. Did you find that when you went to convention at the beginning, you were a little frightened to be among so many blind people?
No. I think for me, the most interesting experience was dealing with all of the service animals that are there. I remember one year I was getting on the elevator, and when the elevator door opened, I got charged by a bunch of service animals because they're doing their job and they're doing what they need to do for the person that they're with. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I had to pay attention as far as that part was concerned. The sound of the canes is, I like the sound. It actually sounds like music.
It sounds nice, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. People tapping away and doing their thing. I think the most scariest thing to me is when I see a person with a cane and they have a cane and they're tapping a cane, but they're walking 103 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. That's scary because you got people running into each other You know, I think that's about the scariest thing, but you can overcome that by just watching for a person and making sure that they're okay, you know, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. But hearing and seeing the different canes and looking at the joy in everybody's face that's enjoying the convention. And there's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of social activities there. I mean, when you go to the general sessions, it's a lot of information that's given. Where there's technologies, different companies that are talking about their movements to make things more accessible for blind and visual impairment. Door prizes, people win a lot of things. And then you go to the exhibit hall, where the exhibit hall has a lot of things there that's related to visual impairment and blindness. And, you know, you got like over 100 exhibitors, and each exhibitor has something unique to offer to an individual that's visually impaired or blind. You can't get no better than that.
The exhibit hall, you have to target where you want to go because there are so many exhibits. You could never get through all of them.
Yeah, I would say because you're there for 6 days, you know, when you go to the exhibit, just take one row at a time, you know. Just take one row at a time, because if you're all over the place, you'll get lost. I usually start with the back wall and then walk all the way around. I then start from the first row all the way down, and that way you won't miss anything. And then you can also ask the information booth to give you they'll give you information on all the vendors that are there, so you could take it and read it, and then they have the numbers, and you could ask somebody at the information desk, where is number such and such, and they'll take you there. That's where I come in a lot too, because I always ask, do you need any assistance? I never assume.
They have a lot of escorts.
Yes.
If you run into problems.
Yes, they're called ambassadors, and I'm one of them. So yes, we have a lot of
they're
ambassadors.
Called ambassadors.
They're called ambassadors.
The planning is amazing.
Yes. And then like, If you're walking, if you know, like general session, we'll have the ambassadors in front yelling out general session over here. They verbalize where what is at the national convention. So that's a beautiful thing. So you won't get lost. You know, you will always get help. We have ambassadors walking around the floor, like myself, watching the elevators, making sure everybody is good. I'm just asking people a lot of questions, and I meet a lot of people by doing that as well. So I really enjoy myself going to the national conventions.
Have you ever had the privilege of going to the national headquarters?
Yes, I went to a
Johnson leadership. Street.
Yes, and Baltimore, Maryland.
Yes, a fantastic place.
Yes, I stayed there for 4 days. I went to a leadership conference in 2017, and it was a great experience. I learned a lot. They talk about leadership, talk about the expectations, how you conduct yourself as a leader, you know, and give you some valuable information that would help you balance out how you work in leadership. So yes, I was blessed to have that opportunity.
What is your biggest fear in life?
Being broke. I'm sorry.
That's a serious one, yes.
Yeah. My biggest fear is, and I tell people this all the time, you got to plan for your success. I'm in my mid-50s now, and I'm working, and I put aside money. My biggest fear is still needing money, but too old to work.
Yes.
That's my biggest fear. So I do my best to do what I need to do to make sure that does not happen. So, yeah, that's my biggest fear.
Do you love music?
Yes, I do love music.
What kind of music do you like?
So, interesting. So, where I'm from, they had no black radio stations. So I grew up on rock and roll, soft rock, heavy metal, stuff like that. And then once I got 17, 18, I started listening to the other side, which, you know, which is our music. So I listened to everything. I listen to, when I say everything, I listen to jazz, I listen to rock and roll, I listen to R&B, hip hop. If it sounds good, I'm listening to it. All genres. Doesn't matter what it is, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I tell people all the time, be open-minded in how you listen to your music. Because if you're open-minded in music, you can learn a lot just by listening to music.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What about, I want to focus a little bit now on technology. When you were growing up, technology was very sparse.
Yes.
Now you have so many choices. Let's start with mobility. What are the predominant things now in mobility besides the average white cane and the guide dog?
So they have a lot of mobility apps now out. You got CNAI, you got IRA, is one of the major ones that's a part of the NFB. You know, since AI is taking over, there are a lot. I could even sit here and name them all, but you have CISIS, you have CNAI, you have IRA, you have Be My Eyes, you know, different apps like that. So you could actually call people and use the cameras on your phone, and they could help you guide you to wherever you you want to go. I'm going to tell you the most interesting thing I've experienced with seeing someone. We went to Vegas in 2021, and we have a young lady that's in our chapter, and she used the apps to help her play the slot machines. And I thought that was pretty unique. The person was sitting there with her and reading off the slot machines and things like that. So if you're creative, you can. There's a lot of technologies out there. They have screen readers, screen readers. Like you got JAWS, and then you got non-visual access.
NVDA.
NVDA. You have that. You have Zoom Text, which is a print. And then a lot of the Apple products, you got voiceover.
Incidentally, I tell people don't discount the reading facility on Microsoft.
Right.
Because it's getting better these days.
Yes.
You're talking about Narrator.
Narrator.
Right, Narrator. Yeah, because all of your computers is coming with a lot of stuff now.
It certainly do.
It used to be 15 years ago, you had to buy this stuff separately. Now the computers are starting to get, they're starting to come with software that speaks for the computer, and they're starting to come with things where you can improve your print on the computer. So, you know, a lot of, you know, technology is evolving every single day.
Incidentally, you know, is the KNFB reader still about?
You know, they call it. I have the KNFB reader. They call it One Step now.
What they call it?
They call it One Step. One Step. One Step now. Okay. Right. Because I think they sold it, but I don't remember to who. The KNFB reader was a great feature when it first came out. But a lot of the complaints came when they started doing the updates. And as I stated before, people don't like change. Change is difficult. So when they do updates and it changes certain formulas, then you got to learn how to reuse the apps because now they're used differently because of the updates. And at this point, now you got other stuff coming out. So KNFB Reader at the time was probably one of the only apps. Probably was the only app. There was another one. Another one too. I can't remember the name of it, but it was another app that did the same thing. So when they came out,
what are you talking about? The Victor Stream?
No. It was called let me find it here as we talk. But they were the only ones that were doing that. Now everybody has OCR now, optical character recognition.
Absolutely.
On a lot of the apps and stuff. So it's everywhere now. So the KNFB reader is no longer the star. Because everybody is doing it now. So you get OCR on digital magnifiers. You get OCR on computers that it's just everywhere. You get OCR apps on a lot of the webcams that are out there now.
Would you say that part of the problem was that they priced themselves out of the market, the KNFB reader? Would you say that?
That's a good question. I'm going to say no, because when the KNFB reader came out, they were only charging one price.
Now it went up astronomically after a while. It was as high as $99 US.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Because the last time I looked at the price was like maybe 6 years ago, or like $99, man.
Yes. Right. It was, yes.
But now you got apps that are coming out now that are doing what you call subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really care for that.
My reading of the situation is that if you set out to help people who are blind with something that is blindness oriented, why mm-hmm. price it so high?
You know, I thought like that at first. I was the same way. I said, you know, you have all this stuff out here, and they say 70% of blind people they don't have jobs.
Yes.
They don't. You know, they do not have jobs. But the time and effort and the amount of work that it takes to create this software, it justifies the price for it. If you do one time, and you could always get assistance through your rehab counselors or in other states. You know, you could get assistance like that. So I felt the same way. But
Michael, hold on. 70% in the United States. But let's look at other part of the world. It's a whole lot more.
Right. Because I'm only a United States. I've never dealt with any outside. So yeah, 70. They said 70 to 80% in the United States. So all over the world, I'm pretty sure that there's other situations that
are... Unemployment rate within the blind community is a lot worse. And you could imagine, I mean, yeah, in the United States, you may be able to get maybe a state counselor or wherever it is to help you to get those screen reader software. But let's go other part of the world. Other part of the world, blind or visually impaired person don't have such kind of luxury.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why I believe in what you call helping, paying it forward. If you have things that you're not using, computers or things that you're sitting on, and I can't speak for the other side of the world. I really can't speak for here either, because I'm not in people's homes. But I'm sure if you accumulate stuff like magnifiers, keyboards, and things like that that you don't need, I always encourage somebody to just donate that to someone who needs the assistance. You know, one year we got together and we sent out a bunch of canes. It was a lot. It was quite a few canes that we sent out to Africa. Right now, I don't go as far as questioning where the canes go. All I can do is say, this is what they say the canes is going. I get the canes, put them there, and pray that it goes to the right areas. Right. You know, that's me, because I'll be hearing some stories, but I'm not there, so I can't really speak on it. But I'm a strong believer in, hey, you know, moving it forward. If you have things that you are not using, that you truly do not need, you know, help somebody else with it. You know, that's what I do. If I have something, if I don't need it, you can have it. I don't even sell it. Now most people, it's not my job to tell somebody that they should give it away as opposed to selling it. It's theirs. So it's their right to do what they want to do with it. So I can't say, you know, you should give it away because they're blind. You know, they may need the money. You know, who knows what their situation is, right?
But
so
Michael, don't you think that a lot of people have mini museums in their homes?
Yes, I do.
Because
I really do.
Because
absolutely 100%.
They get one piece of equipment.
Yep.
And then another one comes out and they get that and they park the first one.
Yep.
Yep.
And somebody else could use it, but
yes,
over time it stays there and corrodes.
Right. Absolutely. But the catch 22 is, who am I to tell you what you should do with your stuff?
No, you can't. You can't.
You're right.
Certainly you cannot do that.
Yeah. I suggest it through open conversation, never directly to anyone, right?
Mm.
If we have something that we do not need that we can pass on to somebody else, you know, we should pass it on. I think it's, but who am I to say, well, you got this stuff. You need to get, you know, so I completely understand where you're coming from when you say things are overpriced, like digital magnifiers. They sell these magnifiers for these digital magnifiers, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, and the handheld ones are $1,500, $1,600, $1,700, $1,800, and they just can't afford to buy that stuff. But I happen to know that there's a web camera out there right now that is called the
Google Glass.
iPivo. No, it's called iPivo VZX. It's a portable web camera that was not designed for visually impaired or totally blind, but it has those features on it for a fraction of what they charge for these CCTVs. So I'm that person that's going to go out in the sighted world who have other technologies, and I'm going to look for something that's going to be a cheaper way for you.
Or do you call it Michael? Spell it again. Let me see.
It's called I. It's spelled iPevo, and then VZX portable, and it's a web camera.
All right, but let's look at, for example, basic thing like screen reader JAWS. All right, I mean the price
Christ up for this world.
Oh yes, the price of Freedom Scientific is actually charging one to have a licensed version of JAWS. It is tremendous.
Yeah, it is. It's very expensive.
I will tell you about one that I stumbled across recently. You know, there's a standalone Orbit reader. The 40 cell is going for $1,900, and the 20 cell is going for $995.
That's a lot.
You know, unless you have agencies that are going to provide these things for you for your work,
Right.
we are stuck. And when I say we, I'm thinking of people in the Caribbean and some other countries.
Caribbean, Central America, South America, Africa,
Oh,
and Asia.
yeah.
Do they have blind centers in those locations?
Yeah, certainly they do.
Yes, we do,
Oh, okay,
but
good.
on a much smaller scale.
Oh, okay,
I
I see.
must tell you that our first reaction with National Federation for the Blind was that they donated the first Kurzweil machine that we owned in the Society for the Blind in Jamaica.
Okay.
And you know, in those days, we're talking about the 1980s. In those days, a Kurzweil machine was the size of a desk. You remember? I don't know if you remember it. It
Oh
came in
yeah,
three parts.
I remember the Creswell machine.
Huge. You know, talk to me now a little bit. I'm going to introduce you to something that I came across recently. I would love to know your views on it. I don't know if you have seen it. It's called what's it called? A robot guide.
Oh.
I don't know if you have heard about it.
Yes, I've seen one at
Well,
CSUN
it's like a
convention.
robot dog.
Yes.
What are your views on something like that?
Well, see, for me, I don't use a guide dog. So I can't really give you my opinion on that, but from so because I don't know, because I don't even have a pet. So, but from a guide dog user, you know, if you ask a guide dog user, then I'm pretty sure they can give you the intricate details of what it does as opposed to what it don't do, and the intricate details of what they need as opposed to what they don't need, right? You know, it may be little details about that robot may not be able to emulate. You know, I'm a believer that no matter how hard you try, you cannot emulate natural movement.
There's a lot of interaction between the user and the dog.
Right. There's
I
a lot.
I can't see a robot giving you any of that.
Yeah,
it will take you from A to B.
Right.
But that's
absolutely.
It.
Mm. Yep, absolutely. There's a lot of little intricate things about that that only a guide dog user can give you. So for me, mm-hmm. I can't see a robot emulating a complete natural animal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so you, it would be kind of cool to get someone who has a guide dog and have them walk with that robot. And I mm-hmm. guarantee you, they'll tell you they'll give you the pros and cons real quick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I can't see a robot emulating a natural service animal.
And I shudder to think of the price that it's going to come out at.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine.
By the time you put cameras on it, a GPS and all of that.
Yeah, your normal hardworking visually impaired person is probably not going to be able to afford that.
No.
I would think, you know. So, yeah, that's interesting. I would like to see how that works.
Are you any good in the kitchen, Michael?
Yes, I can cook.
Oh, you can?
Yes, I actually went to culinary school when I was in Joplin, because they felt like me being visually impaired was probably the only thing I was going to be able to do in the kitchen was cook. So I went there and I learned food preparation and that sort of thing. So, yes, I can cook.
Michael, take the next few minutes and end this discussion by motivating our listeners. We have two sets of listeners. We have listeners who are sighted and we have listeners who are blind. What is a parting statement that you would like to leave for each of these groups?
Okay. For the sighted people, I would say try very hard to place yourself in the shoes of a blind person. I gave a speech once. I was in church, and I said to the people who were sighted, we were talking about some things, and I said, I want you to close your eyes for 30 seconds. Just close it for 30 seconds and put it into your mind, your thought process. What if I could never open my eyes? How would I feel? You know, so the frustration of blindness is something that I take very seriously and have much respect for, because I can see. So I'm always going to have an overly extended compassion for my people who cannot see. Right. And I ask them, I never assume anything. I always stay in my lane when it comes to blindness. I ask a question. If a person asks me something that's related to blindness, I do not answer the question because it's unfair, because I can see. I always refer them to a person who cannot see so they can get relatable conversation. So if you see and you have a person that does not see, please put yourself in a position to try to put yourself in their shoes so you can gather some understanding. And please do not be afraid to ask questions. The only difference between a sighted person and a blind person is they cannot see. It has nothing to do with their mental, their mindset. They're still human. They still have the same abilities that you have. They just cannot see. So when you approach them, say, hey, hi, how you doing? You know, and talk to them. Because if you don't talk to a person that's blind, they're not going to know. If you don't talk to a person that's sighted, they're not going to be able to read your mind. As far as being blind, there are a lot of sighted people out here that do not come across blind people. And they have no idea how to deal with a blind person when they come across a blind person. Educate them. You know, don't get upset with them because they don't know. Teach them. Now, once you tell them and you give them a level of understanding and they still act in a certain way, then it's on them. But teach them. And also, you know, if you are in a situation where you feel in a certain way, talk to a friend, talk to someone who can understand your situation and be able to relate to you, because I love my visually impaired and blind communities, but I also know my place. And if a person is going through, like non-24 is a prime example, where, you know, people have an issue sleeping at night because of blindness.
That's a big one.
Yeah, that's a big one. I'm not the one that I, if you come and you say something to me about that, I'm going to refer you, I'm going to immediately refer you to a person who cannot see so that they can have that conversation with that person so they can have relatable conversation. But educate your sighted people because they do not know. You know, I've been in the National Federation of the Blind since 2014. It's 2024 now. That's 10 years. I can count on one hand how many blind people I've actually ran into or seen in a store. And I go out a lot, whether it's stores, whether it's in shopping malls or whatever. You don't see many. So educate them. And our vice president, I like what he did. There was rules that were, you know, there were simple things that a sighted person can do to a blind person. He got a list of those things that you can do, and we pass them out to people. If you come across somebody who's sighted, here's a list of things. So if you ever run across another blind, I'm going to educate you. So if you run across another blind person, this is something you could read and be prepared for the next time you encounter. It's all about communication and learning and knowing so that you can be fair.
Michael, it was a pleasure talking to you.
If you have any questions or comments regarding this program, please address them to norwill2@gmail.com. That is norwill2@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Have a happy and productive week. That's it for today. Join me next time when we will present another in the series Vision Scope. Music was provided by Rennie Williams Jr.